Welcome to Perspectives Online and On Air from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. This program using the Zoom platform, pre-recorded on Tuesday. That's October 27th for playback on Thursday, October 29th on both the WFSU FM and also the WFSU Public Media Facebook page, which is an absolute treasure trove of good stuff. Check it out if you can. Tallahassee, at least insofar as its existence as the capital city first of the Florida Territory and then the state of Florida, has been around since 1824. Of course, its actual history as an important community precedes that date by a bunch of years, but today we're going to narrow our discussion pretty much to the time since 1824. And in those nearly 200 years, we do have a bicentennial coming up. A lot of folks have lived, died, and been buried in and around this town. And with All Hallows Eve, Halloween, being observed this Saturday, how better to honor the occasion than by digging up, as it were, some fascinating Tallahassee history and the people who made that, because our town is full of ghosts and spooky stories and really cool stuff. And we have some people to talk about it today. Let's meet our panelists as we start off here with the professor, Bob Holliday, who teaches at Tallahassee Community College. He is also president of the Tallahassee Historical Society and has a bunch of books in his basement. Bob, thank you so much for joining us today.
Tom, thank you very much. I probably know less about ghostly Tallahassee than anyone here, but I will try to not make too big an idiot of myself.
You never do, Bob. Thanks for joining us here. Well, of course, anything that has to do with graveyards, there have to be usually some records that are attached therein. And if you want to check out some records, you can probably find them at the City of Tallahassee clerk's office. And the records officer within that office is Matt Lutz. And he has been just chock-a-block full of great information that he's been sending us in anticipation of the program. And for that, Matt, we are totally grateful. And even more grateful that you deigned to come on the program. Good to see you, sir.
And you as well. And thank you for the invitation.
As long as we are digging around, let's check out a member of the Panhandle Archaeological Society, also a longstanding student of history, an advocate, and just all-around great guy. That is Lonnie Mann, and he joins us too. Hi, Lonnie. It is a pleasure to have you on today.
Good morning.
And speaking of archaeology, Paleo West is a great organization, and Julie Duggins is associated with that. And Julie, we appreciate your participation here as well.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to the discussion.
Well, let's start off that discussion here with some, let's get into the graveyard first. Matt Lutz, let's start with you. You have a lot of information down at the City of Tallahassee clerk's office relative to certainly the old city cemetery, but as you were saying before we went on the air, that cemetery, as old as it is, I think going back to the very earliest days of the community, during that settlement period around 1824 as the territorial capital, the records don't go back that far. What happened?
They don't. So the longstanding rumor is there was a fire or some mishap sometime around 1911, and all of the early records of Old City Cemetery were destroyed at that time. In the years following that, some effort was made to go back and survey and canvas the cemetery to try to recreate some of what was lost. The results of that are compiled in a book that is in the city clerk's vault in City Hall. Unfortunately, the effort really only focused on the white section of the cemetery, the eastern section. But it's pretty obvious from reading that book that people at that time walked the headstones and they cataloged whatever information could be harvested simply by canvassing the cemetery grounds. There are also quite a few names of unmarked burials that are present in that book. So it's obvious to us that townsfolk came out and assisted in that process by showing the sexton at that time where their relatives were buried, and their names were also placed in that book.
But a lot of enslaved people were also in the Old City Cemetery. I think over in what, the southwestern quadrant, that was kind of set aside for black burials back in the day?
That's correct. So in the areas of the era of segregation, the cemetery was separated in an east to west fashion. So the eastern half was considered to be the white burial grounds, and everything west of the fence line that once stood there was reserved for African-American burials. And I say half, it wasn't exactly half. The eastern segment is actually a little bit larger than the western portion. But for many, many decades, there was a fence that bifurcated those two areas. That fence was taken down or rotted away at some point. And for many years, there used to be a hedgerow. But it's my understanding that hedgerow was removed sometime in the 1970s or 80s. So when you walk through the cemetery today, there's really no visual demarcation anymore between the white and black sections of the cemetery. But a trained eye, if you know to look for it, you can kind of figure out where that fence once stood.
All right. And what's the current census at the Old City Cemetery? Do you have a guesstimate on how many occupants or residents are there, Matt?
Well, the cemetery grounds itself are about 8 acres. We haven't calculated exactly because there again, the records are piecemeal. We're still working on that. And I don't know that we'll ever really reach at a specific number because for the first about 11 years of the city's cemetery's operation, it was just known as the public burying grounds. It was not necessarily under any kind of city management or ownership at that point. And from looking at the records and the newspaper accounts that have survived, it's kind of obvious to me that families in town simply went out to that area and staked a claim on the portion of the cemetery that they liked the best, and that became their family plot. The city government did not actually purchase the land until 1840. And it was at that same time, that same auction, the federal government was auctioning off the lands around Tallahassee. The city purchased that parcel. And St. John's Cemetery, the church, purchased the land for their cemetery, which is immediately north of Old City Cemetery across Call Street.
So there's lots of cemeteries, though, besides the city cemetery and the St. John's Cemetery that's adjacent to it. Bob Holliday, is there any guesstimate, again, on how many graveyards there are just in Leon County? Many churches used to have almost an obligatory graveyard right next door to the church, and some of those churches are not there anymore.
That's funny. That's exactly the question I was going to ask Matt and Julie, all the others. How many cemeteries do we know? And I asked, do we know, are in Leon County? Because there are bound to be a bunch that we don't know. I remember 8 or 10 years ago that a friend of mine who works at the Bureau of Archaeological Research, Brandon Ackerman, took my wife and me on a little tour of unknown cemeteries, and I'll never forget where it was. I mean, I'll never forget it. I don't remember where it was, but you know, just somebody's backyard in one of the subdivisions. I mean, here are a couple of Florida governors buried there from 100 or so years ago. Or you go over off of North Monroe near the Jackson Mound site, and right there in somebody's backyard is the burial place of Robert Butler, who is the first surveyor general of this state. And there's all this, you know, stuff around it and so forth, but right in the middle of this yard is this. So there must be dozens of those. I mean, Matt, Lonnie, Julie, what's you all's count?
Matt, there's what, like 40 some odd in the city and find a grave, and I don't know in the county how many are listed and find a grave, considerably more than the city limits, maybe 60 or 70. So, you know, getting well up over 100 that are listed on find a grave, those are recorded cemeteries that have been recorded. But the fact is there are numerous family plots all over Leon County that are unreported and unknown. And that's one of the reasons that it's important to record cemeteries in the state master site file, is to put these on the map, to put them on record for a variety of reasons. One is because it's part of our history. And secondly, because if an area is developed, it's very important to have a cemetery marked because there are laws relating to disposition of cemeteries. So just for those two reasons alone, a community really needs to get in behind seeing that cemeteries are documented.
And right now we're seeing some additional cemeteries pop up in the form of the over at the Capital City Country Club that has emerged recently. Over along the Miccosukee Greenway, there is one cemetery that I think the Trust for Public Land rehabilitated probably about a dozen years ago. And was there a report that there was another cemetery there? There were three old black churches in that neck of the woods, and I think they all had, cemeteries along what is now the Greenway. Is that true, Lonnie?
Yes, New Hope Cemetery at Testarina Primitive Baptist Church out Miccosukee Road. Gloria Jefferson Anderson, whose family is buried there, is spearheading an effort to obtain recognition for the cemetery, which is unmarked. There are no stones or anything. She and I have done some work on that, trying to do some preliminary work in documenting it. And Bureau of Archaeological Research plans this winter to do a cadaver dog recon of the cemetery to delimit the bounds.
Okay.
But it dates to about eight. Well, we don't really know when the first burials were. There was a hush arbor starting about 1871 near the location. And then about 1884, Testarina Church was a log structure. And so it's obviously very old, but we don't have a precise date.
Okay. And
I don't mean to interrupt. I probably ought to know this, but have they found a cemetery over on Walani, the Walani development?
Well, the thing is that the Walani development, I think it's going to be extremely important to document cultural resources in advance of development. And again, because you have these small... That whole area was cotton plantation, and then it was, after that, tenant farms, and then hunting plantations. And there were numerous African-American families living on that property. There were little trails and roads between Centerville and Miccosukee Road, and there were vibrant communities there. And the problem with traditional archaeology is if you go and you just do shovel testing, you're going to probably miss little ephemeral small sites like that. That's why I think it's very important to go the extra mile in terms of documenting the cultural resources at Walani as it develops.
Yeah, and Julie Duggins, a lot of those old documents, though, just do not exist. That puts you in jeopardy that if you just go out and you start, I don't know, planting post holes, you could come across something that you don't want to.
That's right. And I think it's important to note the distinction between marked cemeteries and unmarked cemeteries. And Tom, you mentioned the recent discovery or rediscovery of a cemetery on the golf course, which had no markers. It didn't have large gravestones that everybody can still see, or doesn't today. Some of these cemeteries may have had wooden markers at one time in the past. They may have had vegetation. They may have had fences. They may have had shells or markers of the graves. But over time, some of these have deteriorated, leaving us with nothing but the archaeological record in cases where we don't have documents, like you say.
Yeah, and Matt Lutz, do those, as they are literally unearthed, as we find evidence of new grave sites throughout the area, does that then get added into the overall master database somewhere at the city clerk's office or elsewhere?
Well, that is part of what we're trying to fix. So recently we've been meeting and having some discussions on that very issue of trying to formalize that process a little better and get all of that data into one place to make those cemeteries more well-known. The data concerning them right now is scattered in various places. So for example, when a cemetery is encountered, anybody can complete the Department of State forms. It's known as a site file. So it's about a 2 or 4 page document. You can download it from the Department of State's website and fill it out. And that goes into the Department of State's records. That doesn't necessarily carry over and get into city or county records. We've made an effort on the city side to know where the cemeteries are within the corporate limits, the city limits of Tallahassee, but not necessarily out in the rural areas of the county. But we can certainly make an effort and hope to do so and get those in one unified GIS map that's accessible to the public so that they can see where these places are. And as Lonnie and Bob noted, I think that figure of about 110 to 120 cemeteries countywide is pretty accurate. And, you know, if you just kind of sit down and start thinking about where they are, you're not going to get anywhere close to that figure, but they're literally hidden just about everywhere around town.
And those are the ones that are of essentially European extraction. There are Native American grave sites all over the place, too. And, of course, no written records exist for those. Maybe Lonnie or Julie can fill us in on that. Are we still uncovering evidence of those burial sites other than, you know, the most renowned, like up around Lake Jackson and all? Are they all over the place, too?
Well, the fact is that in the acid soil here, a lot of Native American burials have basically deteriorated. The ones that are best known are the ones that are marked by mounds. But not everybody was buried in a burial mound. But I don't think people are finding a lot of sites, are they, Julie, Native American sites out?
Well, Lonnie, we try not to. We essentially, you know, just like any cemetery, the goal is to leave those sacred places intact, right? So if there's any indication that would make us think that there is a Native American burial, consultants like myself will make every effort to predict that and avoid it and recommend preservation or very carefully document it. But no, you're right. The acidic soils here in Leon County lead to degradation, but you know, that's not to say that the graves aren't still detectable, especially some of the more recent ones. So rather than talking about maybe some of the mound burials or these earlier sites, sites like missions had large graveyards. San Damien is a great example of one that has burials, you know, just right below the surface, and they're detectable today, and survived the acidic soils in a way, at least the state.
I guess some of the material remains could also be a giveaway. I mean, what might have been buried with the person might give an indication. But like Julie says, there are strict federal laws governing Native American archaeological or burial sites, mortuary sites.
Well, before we...
And there's also state laws.
Oh, that's right. And I remember, weren't you also involved, Lonnie, with the laws that proscribe the collecting of artifacts such as arrowheads and things of that nature that used to be almost a cottage industry in this part of the country?
Well, it was, an archaeological site, once it's dug up by looters and destroyed, the history that it has is lost forever. It's not something that's renewable. And there was several efforts to legalize the taking of artifacts from state lands. And fortunately, the bill wasn't passed by the legislature. So, this is a serious problem, is looting of archaeological sites. And a lot of this stuff is just for financial gain. It goes on the internet, ends up in Japan or in somebody's attic and gets thrown out. So that is very important to try to avoid any destruction of these sites. Land doesn't relate to private land, though.
Okay.
I mean, on private land, you can do whatever you want to, but certainly it's great when sites are pointed out to archaeologists. And sites need to be documented. They don't need to be preserved or have a memorial or anything like that. But when a site is discovered, it needs to be documented in the site file and studied before it's developed.
And Bob Holliday, as you had mentioned before when we did the program on the old plantations, once you remove the artifact from that environment without documentation, all those connections are lost then. You can't recreate that.
Yeah, I'd like to ask the others just to clarify for me and for the viewers, just what are the state and local laws? I mean, if you're developing something like Wolone, which is private land, and you come upon either a slave cemetery or a European American cemetery, what happens? Do you have to stop? Or do you proceed? I mean, what's the process?
I'll throw that one to Julie about state laws anyway.
Well, there are a couple of state laws that protect burials, and they actually are protected on private land as well. Lonnie was talking about public lands and looting a minute ago. But unmarked burials are protected in statute by a state statute, Chapter 872. It's all public record if you want to look it up. And we have a Cemetery Act that also protects marked burials. And we've got ordinances about or procedures about potentially moving graves. You asked what happens. The first thing that happens is we pause, construction or whatever caused the discovery of that site. And then we have consideration for what needs to happen next. And in certain cases, the best thing to do might be to move the cemetery and relocate it out of harm's way, out of the way of the development. But in many cases, the best plan for all parties involved is to avoid it, is to avoid developing that particular area. And like Lonnie said, that might mean memorializing it, but more than anything, it just means documenting the cemetery and making sure that we've got good boundaries on it and that we respect those boundaries. After all, regardless of what the laws say, we're really just considering that these are sacred places that people decided to put their ancestors, whether they're Native American, whether they're African American, whether they're early settlers or really recent, 1960s burials. We don't want to disturb those.
Yeah, that is a factor of human respect that you should maintain for all those situations. Well, beyond the burial locations, so let's get into some stories here. And by the way, folks, if you're just tuning in, this is a special perspectives in the run-up to the Halloween celebration this Saturday. We have a panel of folks who have been following history when it comes to not only our grave sites in Tallahassee and Leon County, but they've got some insights into some of the other history that's connected with our sometimes woe-begone past in this area. If you miss any or all of a Perspectives program, it's available online, not only at our WFSU.org website, but also on our WFSU Public Media Facebook page. We try to have the most recent program up on both of those sites as soon as we can, as it airs on the radio on Thursday, so you can go back and review revisit it again and again. Matt Lutz, you sent me a ton of good stuff here in the run-up to this program about different odd and sometimes unexplained phenomena in regard to some of the burials here in Tallahassee. And I don't know if we want to call them ghost stories, if you know, we want to go that far, but tell us some of the ones that really stand out in your mind that, oh my gosh, this is something that most people would not believe.
Sure, sure. And I'll have to thank Lonnie for reminding me of this one. But we'll jump back to 1840 when I mentioned that the city finally purchased the land and started governing the operation of the cemetery there. The first cemetery caretaker in the industry, they're known as the cemetery sexton, was a gentleman by the name of Joseph Edmondson. He was a city councilman, but he was also a local merchant in town, and his business was furniture making. It was one of his operations, which kind of makes sense because one of the things that he built on the side was coffins. But he was the first documented cemetery sexton that I was able to locate. And in addition to the wooden caskets that he manufactured, on the market in the 1850s came out a very obscure item that could be purchased only by the wealthiest of individuals, but it was known as a Fisk metallic burying case. Metallic, it was really cast iron, and it looked much like an Egyptian sarcophagus, a mummy-like object. And it had an octagonal glass window over the decedent's face. One of these was unearthed in Old City Cemetery in 1919 by Cully's Funeral Home, who was out in the cemetery preparing a grave for a burial. And it became kind of the talk of the town in the early spring of 1919, so much that Cully hopped in his car, raced to town to grab a newspaper reporter to drag him out to the cemetery to show them what they had just unearthed. They actually removed this Fisk burial case and drug it into town and put it on display for a few days as they tried to examine it and determine what it was. But after a period of days, they did return it to the cemetery and reburied it where they found it. So that was kind of an interesting discovery that had been lost to time briefly, but unearthed yet again.
Did they ever find out whose it was? I mean, what grave it was associated with?
Yeah, and this is the part that really always aggravates me when we chase a subject like this, is none of the newspaper articles mention specifically who they were burying when they discovered this, because that would be the ultimate clue we would need to find out where in the 8 acres of the cemetery this thing is buried. So unfortunately, no. So that was one of the more unique burials that are there. I thought I would segue into kind of current events. So we're globally experiencing a pandemic that has not been seen in many, many decades. But Tallahassee's been struck before by items like this. The most notable, earliest one would have been in 1841 when the yellow fever epidemic struck Tallahassee, and yellow fever being a mosquito-borne illness. That should come as no surprise to anybody who's been outside of late in the evening hours. But yellow fever set in the summer and wreaked havoc on the population of Tallahassee. And some estimates put it as high as 10% of the town perished from yellow fever. So you will see plenty of markers dated 1841 when you walk through the cemetery. One of the notable families was a Welford family, where virtually the entire family was wiped out, save one or two of them. Bob, you had mentioned governors buried in the county, way off. So Governor Robert Raymond Reed, he was also infected with yellow fever, and he and many of his family also died. And they're buried in that kind of out-of-the-way cemetery that's off Fred George Road. I think that's probably the one that you were describing there.
Yeah.
And then again in 1918, when the global Spanish flu epidemic hit, that again had devastating effect locally, and you will find plenty of 1918 headstones and early 1919 headstones for people who came down with the Spanish influenza and did not survive. So those are kind of interesting ones when you know what to look for there. In the southeast quadrant of the cemetery, you will find a very large tombstone. It's probably the most prominent one in the entire cemetery, but it's for a Tallahassee lady by the name of Elizabeth Budd Graham. She was the granddaughter of one of the town's wealthiest merchants, David Wilson, who was also a city councilman for several terms. But she died at a very young age, in her early 20s, I believe. And after her death, the family purchased this, what is truly a very, very large monument, and installed it in the cemetery to mark her grave. In the aftermath of that, the word began circulating and rumors circulating in town that somehow Elizabeth Graham, who was known as Bessie, was a witch. She had bewitched her husband in order to get him to marry her. And after she was buried, this story has perpetuated all these years. And it's not uncommon if you visit Old City Cemetery today and you go over to Elizabeth Graham's monument, located on there are almost always offerings that have been left by people within the last few weeks, all kind of objects that, you know, the cemetery staff and other folks have to go and collect up and dispose of. So that's kind of a common occurrence as well. The whole myth around Bessie being a witch has been thoroughly dispelled for obvious reasons, but one of the reasons that was stated was her monument faces to the west. So therefore she must be a witch because everybody else's headstone faces to the east. But even that is not true. So if you canvass the cemetery, you will find plenty of examples of headstones that face in a westerly orientation. It's less common, but it's not exactly rare, and hers is certainly not the only one.
Still plenty of stories about that. Bob Holliday, what are some of your favorite tales, if you will?
Well, I'm having a senior moment. I can't even remember the name, but last year with the Historical Society, Andy and Marty Pytel did a really good program on that huge sarcophagus down in not the Old City Cemetery.
It's in Oakland Cemetery. It's Calvin Phillips.
Yes, thank you. I couldn't remember the name. Talk to us about Calvin Phillips, Matt.
Okay, so we'll pivot. So this is in the city's Oakland Cemetery. So this is the cemetery that is bounded by Brevard and Duval Streets. Calvin Phillips was an architect by trade. He relocated to Tallahassee about 1907 and was, by all accounts, a very eccentric individual. Some of you may recall that at one time in the All Saints neighborhood on South Macomb Street, is where he resided. He built a clock tower structure that was very unique and was kind of a fixture in Tallahassee up until the late 60s or early 1970s when it was torn down. But being an architect, Calvin Phillips actually designed and he built his own burial mausoleum in Oakland Cemetery. And it is a very unique structure as well. It's in the southern half of Oakland Cemetery, very near Brevard Street. And I'll describe it as kind of an onion-topped building. It almost has a motif of the Kremlin, almost.
But he was cleaned it. Andy cleaned it last year and did a great job on it.
So he's been working to do some preservation on there to try to keep that mausoleum in good order. But not only did he build his own mausoleum, he actually was buried in it. Not in the ground, but his coffin was, I'll say, sawhorses for lack of a better description, but there was a metal platform that his coffin was placed on, and he had a glass lid on his coffin. So for many, many decades, you were, as just a member of the public visiting Oakland Cemetery, would be able to go up to that mausoleum, open the door, walk in, and see Calvin Phillips there in the casket with his glass top. But there was some vandalism that occurred with that, and there was one burglary in the 1980s, and then again in April of 2000, his mausoleum was burglarized and vandalized a second time, and the thief or thieves at that time actually carried his skull away, and it has never been found.
Oh, good Lord. What a great story that is. Lonnie Mann, tell us some of your favorite tales, if you would.
Well, I don't have any Halloween tales, but I can mention a couple of things that I think are kind of scary. And that is instances of development over African-American cemeteries. And for example, Benton Cemetery, which is now a little postage stamp, was originally much larger. When that neighborhood was developed in the 60s, invariably many of those graves were developed over. In Killarn, I think at Killarn and Plantation, there's a large African-American cemetery that was simply built over. And I think this is a, you know, because a lot of these cemeteries, as people have mentioned, have maybe like wood markers or no markers. And I think people maybe know they're there, but they're not that obtrusive. So they're easy to develop over. That's, you know, why it's important to document these places in advance of development.
Sure. And that's one of the great perpetual fears, I think, of just about everyone is how many horror movies have we seen? Someone builds a house over a Native American gravesite and horrible things transpire after that. And whether or not that's for real, that's still something that people don't want to even think about. Julie Duggins, what are some things that did jump out at you with all of the excavating and archaeological research that you have done? Any tales of Tallahassee that you'd like to share?
Well, I'm not sure about tales of excavation, but something that just keeps coming to mind is the Spanish moss over these cemeteries and the older markers and some of the stories that the people probably have left untold. And they're always that much scarier feeling at night. But my question for Matt would be, I don't even know. I know that when I was a kid, I probably went to some cemeteries after hours and shouldn't have. But are there any cemeteries in town that are open when it's dark out, Matt? Or should we respect them at night?
Not that I'm aware of. The city managed cemeteries their operating hours are sun up to sundown, and they are patrolled at night. So the police department does drive through them and drive by them looking for folks at night. So anybody that's caught there after the operating hours are subject to being trespassed from the premises, and if they return, they are subject to arrest. So we would very much, especially with Halloween just a few days away, like to remind folks that we are a daytime operation, and nighttime visits to the cemeteries, the city cemeteries, are against the rules.
Have we ever had any cemetery tours like Halloween or other events, you know, where people will portray, mm-hmm. where people will portray the people, you know, and sort of tell their stories and so forth?
Yeah, so on occasion, groups do guided tours within the cemetery. So the Department of State did one recently. So Dr. Josh Goodman conducted, that was on a Saturday morning. Yeah. So, or actually over a series of Saturday mornings, he did several. And there used to be a tour company here in town that would stop by, and part of their tour of downtown would be to walk through Old City Cemetery. I'm not aware of anybody who's doing the production to the point where they actually dress up in period costumes and go to kind of that level of exhibit, but certainly we ought to look at doing something like that in the future. I think that would be a very good thing for the community, and it would really go a long ways in educating the folks here about who is in our city cemeteries, because they really are, when you actually take time to study and research the people there, it is a who's who of early Tallahassee and early Florida. It's quite remarkable the number of prominent individuals who are buried within our cemetery. But even when you get to the working folks, their stories are equally fascinating and should be documented and celebrated through tours like that.
Sounds like something. Sounds like a great bicentennial project.
I agree. So one of the things I've long wanted to see developed, and hopefully I'll get a chance to work on it, is a walking tour application of some kind. So with the advances in technology, the fact that the city has digitized all of our records, we now have searchable online GIS maps for most of our cemeteries, to the point where you can search on somebody's name, and once you locate them, you can click on the link there, and the system will actually display you a map of the cemetery and show you exactly where you can locate that grave. So they're an excellent finding tool, especially folks who may be visiting from out of town who are trying to find their great-great-great-great-grandparents and have never been here. It will be an excellent tool to assist them in locating those graves.
And as you said, to incorporate that maybe with something like, I know Beth Civita and some of those other folks had done like ghost tours of Tallahassee something like a dozen years ago with some of those tales. But with now that capability that you talked about, similar to what is going on in historic Frenchtown, you could put all of that together on one tour or subdivided into different tour menus. Julie, you had something you wanted to throw in there.
No, I was just excited by Matt's comment. I love the idea of an app or a map of some sort where we have self-guided tours of cemeteries. And I love that the city's developing that. And I think it'll put the information into people's hands a lot easier.
I like
daytime, of course, right?
Oh, I like to follow up on Matt's comment just to say that many of us appreciate the work that he's done with the city and getting historical records together and work on cemeteries. An example is Julie and I were doing a project out at Goodwood and several other people of the cabin of a fellow who used to be the caretaker out there who died in 1931, and we couldn't find out where he was buried. And Matt went through the city records and found a transposed name and put us right on the spot. So I consider that fairly miraculous.
So, and I certainly appreciate that, but I do want to take time to thank, you know, this is a team effort on our side. It's not just me. So there is a staff in the clerk government. They were, you know, they walked the headstones before the modern computerized age and cataloged as many of these headstones that they could. And their work was really instrumental in getting us to where we are today. And certainly some of them are still active employees, but many of them have retired. They are to definitely be credited and thanked for their hard work. And then our GIS unit. So the city and county share a GIS mapping unit. Their efforts and their skill was also instrumental in getting those online maps created, and we definitely could not have done it without them. So I greatly thank not only my staff, but all the folks who participated, current and retired.
Matt, can I ask,
Bob, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Can I ask the three of you all a question about the status of I think the – I hate to use the word ghostliest, maybe I should, cemetery that I know of in this area, and that is the cemetery down on the Verdura Plantation south of town. I mean, I know that's owned by St. Joe and has been. Are there any plans for that? Does anybody know what's going on about that?
I haven't heard of any. It's been heavily looted over the years, and, you know, many of the pieces on the marble pieces have been pulled off and hauled away. And the Verdura, of course, is an incredible place, but it is on private land. It's posted. But it's something that certainly deserves more attention, but it's going to take some real resources, I think, to pull off.
Yeah, I think currently the idea is just to make sure that none of that vandalism keeps occurring, that the site is as protected as possible. Since it's in private hands and protected at least by signage and fences, we can be relatively sure people won't damage it. But I think the bigger thing is just telling the story. And St. Joe has plans. I'm not sure where they are currently, but plans for interpretation and plans to get that story out in the Southwood community, but also to greater Tallahassee and explain what happened there, why the site's important, and then give people a little bit of a glimpse or an idea about what's back kind of hidden in those woods.
I will say this about St. Joe. They get ripped for a lot of things, but they've actually been pretty good stewards of that land down there, as far as I can tell. And they've taken a fair amount of care with it, I think, unless you guys know something I don't.
Well, people should read Sharon Thompson's book, Whispers at Verdura, if you're interested in the Chairs family and that plantation. It's a fascinating read.
It really is.
Yeah, we went over that in a previous program, as I recall, Professor Holliday.
Yeah.
That was.
And Tom, I've got one last story that I'll leave you with, if you'll permit me.
Please do, Matt.
So back in Oakland Cemetery, one of the more interesting discoveries there is the grave of Bobby Wilkerson, Robert Jarvis Wilkerson. So this was a young man that was employed in the railroad industry and worked at the railroad depot here in Tallahassee. And he met an early demise in a railroad accident. So he was a switchman, and his leg was caught and crushed between two of the rail cars as he was trying to couple them together. So he was severely injured and rushed to the local hospital, and they unfortunately had to amputate his leg. His leg was then taken to Oakland Cemetery and buried, and Mr. Wilkerson remained in the hospital, where unfortunately he died several days later. Being from Pensacola, they shipped the rest of his body, to Pensacola, where he was interred there. So Mr. Wilkerson actually has two graves, which is somewhat uncommon. But what's interesting is I bring up the leg, because something very similar happened just months earlier than that in Springfield, Illinois, where another individual lost their leg. Their leg was also buried in the local cemetery, but unfortunately for that individual, news of that burial had made its way all the way to the local supervisor of election, who, seeing the burial form, struck the individual's name from the voter roll. And when he showed up, missing a leg, to the next election, he was said, sorry, but you're dead. You can't vote.
God. Yes.
That's timely, Matt.
Yeah, it really is.
Especially since we've been looking to purge the deceased from all of our contemporary voter rolls. But, yeah. Terrific story, Matt. We really appreciate it. Just a few more minutes to go. Let's go around the room. And again, Professor Bob Holliday, any last wisdom to share as we swing in towards this All Hallows Eve celebration on Saturday?
Not really, except I'd just like to echo what Julie and everybody here has said, that this was a very rural county for a very long time, and there are cemeteries, both marked and unmarked, everywhere. I mean, I just as the land gets developed and as it gets used and so forth, I mean, just be very, very careful about that sort of thing. I mean, it really is a cultural heritage.
And Lonnie Mann, I see you nodding in assent on that.
Just an amen to what Bob said, that preservation of cultural resources is a real imperative, I think, for humans. And we have archaeological deposits under our feet anywhere we walk, even downtown Tallahassee. Sites going back to the territorial period are turned up in various excavations, and it's just extremely important to report and document these things.
And Julie Duggan, certainly the same holds true with you in Paleo West, since you are very much involved with those kinds of excavations and trying to document what came before as we dig down deeper.
That's right. We really just want to document it and tell the stories that have gone untold, or maybe potentially records that have been destroyed in a fire.
Yes, like the ones we were talking about at the outset of the program, Matt Lutz. And when can we expect to have the that unified database and the app ready to go so people can actually go out and do some of their own archaeological research using their phone rather than digging tools?
Right. So the maps are largely available today. So for the city's newer cemeteries, Roselawn, Oakland, Southside, those maps are fully operational and available on our website today. The map for Old City is still being constructed. We've been canvassing there and have got the northern half done, and we will try to complete the southern half by the end of 2021. There we will pivot and try to tackle the Greenwood Cemetery, which is off of the Old Bainbridge Road, very close to the Alabama Street corridor. So that will be our fifth and final mapping effort. Parallel to that, we've been digitizing the records, and we hope to have those available sometime in 2021 as well. So you'll be able to access those from the city website.
Matt Lutz with the City Clerk's Office, keeping track of all of those multitudinous records, and thank you for what you do on that. Bob Holliday, President of the Tallahassee Historical Society and Professor of History at TCC, also Lonnie Mann from the Panhandle Archaeological Society, and all you have done as far as advocacy and educating the lawmakers, which is a major chore in and of itself. And Julie Duggins, you and your team at Paleo West were, again, showing us where we have been and perhaps giving us some insights on where we still need to go. Thank you for being part of this program as well, folks. And happy Halloween, gang.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Happy Halloween. Stay safe.
Perspectives produced by WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox, Paul Dam, Amy Diaz de Villegas, Devin Bittner, Tricia Moynihan, and Lydell Rawls, our director of content, Kim Kelling. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, while there's been a national effort to observe Juneteenth as the day associated with the Emancipation Proclamation, the reading of that historic document in Florida actually preceded the reading in Texas, which was the basis of the Juneteenth observance. In Florida, it's May 20th, Emancipation Day. We're going to talk about its official recognition on our next Perspectives coming up from WFSU Public Media.
For more information about Perspectives and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org.